Hey guys, Louie DiBiase here of Locked On Eagles. Today's podcast is sponsored by Roman. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, the secret to longer lasting sex. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free 2-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Now let's start up the show. What's going on, everybody? Welcome in. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louie DiBiase joining you on this Victory Monday. It's the first time we can say that in a couple weeks. Again, Louie DiBiase here alongside my co-host Gino Camilleri. The Eagles are at 4-4, and we said it the exact same way last year, Gino, when they beat the Jacksonville Jaguars to save their season, which is exactly what they did today on the road. Like, it's, you were saying it yesterday, time is just a flat circle. They go on the road, taking on an AFC team with a great defense, like a tough environment. This year in Buffalo, we were at the game, which we'll get into that. Last year was in London, so not easy to travel there, and they pulled out probably their most complete game. So it was almost the exact same thing as in 2018. And I don't know, man, like, I just feel like that was the Eagles we knew. Their backs against the wall, season on the line, they came together and had their most complete game. And once again, against a team that doesn't have the best quarterback in Josh Allen, but overall has a pretty strong roster and was 5-1 for a reason. Yes, they have a pretty weak schedule, but like, that's a good defense that Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson really had. I think they're one of their stronger performances, and it just feels good. I mean, like, 4-4 is not where you want to be at the halfway point, but I'll take it considering the circumstances they were in over these past 3 weeks.
Yeah, first off, I'm going to apologize for my voice. It is in rough shape after yesterday. Had to go back and forth with all those Bills fans. Back and forth banner made it fun. But yeah, Lou, we were talking yesterday, and I've said it time and time again, especially going into this game, our fans' confidence level was really down. BLG from Bleeding Green Nation tweeted out that we had like a 7% fan confidence rating.
It was like
going
lowest in the league,
game.
I think.
It was third lowest in the league.
Okay, yeah.
Washington was 1% and Atlanta was 0. And we were next at 7. Which is kind of crazy to think, because exactly a year ago, we were in the exact same situation. 3-4 on the road against an AFC opponent in a tough environment against a good defense. How many times did I mention that the last 2 weeks when we were talking about this matchup?
I think maybe the difference confidence-wise was the sources last year, the stories didn't really come out until a few weeks later. It was really after that Saints loss where now we were kind of thinking, me and you said it, and shout out to the 4th and John guys who were nice enough to come in studio on Saturday with their trip to Buffalo. We were all talking about it, me, you, E-Rock, and Gale Saunders, that this game would either be, okay, they're going to let all of that destroy them. Orlando Scandrick could be right about everything, or it's going to bring them closer together, and it's going to be the whole, you know, us against the world mentality like it has been for the past 2 years. And that, you know, Fletcher Cox said it after the game, that is what the result was yesterday.
Yeah, and they didn't really get off to a hot start. It was, what, 3 points in the first quarter against the Bills team that struggles to score as well, and you saw that. But they really got it into gear when it mattered, and I'm still all in on the idea of taking those first 15 plays and just throwing them in the garbage, because after that, they started to get it going. That the defense took over in that game. That was a great performance. Hats off to Jim Schwartz. You and I looked at each other a couple times when they were playing press coverage up at the line on third down.
We're almost like, the entire game they were forever. Doing that. Yeah, I mean, on 3rd and 4, they're playing press coverage. I'm like, wait, where are we? Who are we watching?
Absolutely, and we were waiting for Jim Schwartz to adapt. And the thing with him is he's so stubborn. But the times he does adapt, great things happen. We mentioned the Houston game last year when they
played
a lot.
The Giants game
on
Thursday night. I mean, Darby had his best performance I've ever seen against the Giants and Odell Beckham, and it was because Schwartz adjusted.
Yeah, and you have to in this NFL, and you have to adapt or die. And I think that Bills' game plan was to come out and throw against a weak pass offense. You saw that. Allen goes out there, throws 34 passes, only completes 16, 47% completion percentage. Carson Wentz, on the other hand, has never finished below 50% in completion percentage in his NFL career. Just going to throw that statistic out there for everybody.
True.
But yesterday you saw it, and we talked about it time and time again. Josh Allen will make mistakes. This offense, the defense is going to have to put the offense in favorable field positions. And by the law of averages, we were not going to have two bad starts like we did the prior 2 weeks. And for once, the bounces came our way. Right off the bat, Fletcher Cox with the fastest sack of the week at 2.4 seconds, according to Next Gen Stats. Creates a turnover immediately, got things going in the right direction, really set the tone. And, man, if they got off the field on those third downs, the Bills may not have scored a touchdown the entire game. That one touchdown drive, they converted those couple third and longs, couple stupid penalties, and the same with the next one. Both of the touchdowns were on third and long situations. But the defense looked good, and the offense did what it had to do without Deshaun. And I looked at you at one point towards the end of the game and kind of whispered it because Bills fans weren't too happy with me at that point. I said, if Deshaun was playing in this game, we realistically could have scored close to 50 points.
Oh, yeah.
They moved the football.
Yeah, the fact that they put up 31 points despite the offense still being pretty compact is so impressive. And once again, like I was telling you yesterday, Orlando Scandrick just needs to say stuff every single week. Like Fox Sports 1, right. If you can pay this guy full-time just to spew hot takes about Malcolm Jenkins and Lane Johnson, like I am all for it. Because once again, it was make-or-break time, do-or-die. Were they going to show that, yes, all of these problems really were part of the reason the Eagles' 2019 season was about to go off the rails? Were we going to see, maybe, yes, this locker room is broken? I saw the complete opposite yesterday. That was a team that came together, both sides of the ball. There were so many positive things that we're going to get into in segment 2 and 3 from the offensive side of the football that you were talking about, from the defensive side. It was, to me, their most complete game of the season. And that was, again, despite being on the road, coming off, it's, you know, that's the end of a 3-game road trip. They really did not get the good end of the stick when it came to the schedule makers making that part of their schedule. A 3-game road trip against 3 really good defenses. And, you know, I was wearing my poncho yesterday, Gino. It was a rainy day throughout before kickoff, so that didn't really help the, you know, conditions. And then the wind just did not stop throughout the game, so it wasn't easy to throw in that weather. So the fact that they got to 4-4 right now, again, not where you want to be. They should probably be 6-2 right now if it weren't for a couple drops, but, you know, a win's a win. And, you know, the Eagles like to say it all the time, they're 1-0 this week, and they kept the season alive. I did not want to have to go through 8 weeks of doing this with the season pretty much gone, you know, especially with the trade deadline tomorrow. So and shout out real quick, me and Gino were at the game. Shout out to Eagles fans. Me and you were talking, and your fiance Jen, and my girlfriend Kim, we're all just like in awe because that felt like a home game. I mean, we met some awesome fans from the 215, and man, there was so much green in that stadium. Eagles fans travel really well. I mean, that's a 6-hour drive, so it's not too bad, and they showed up.
Yeah, they really did, and it felt like a home atmosphere. We were sitting around the sidelines, but well, not on the field before the game started. And we'll talk about what we said to Howie Roseman in segment 3 when
we talk about
the trades. We got a big insider scoop coming your way. But yeah, looking around, just it was great to see everybody. Everybody that I was talking to didn't seem too down. I mean, as much as the fan confidence was down, according like to the national media, there were still close to 15,000 to 20,000 Eagles fans there, without a doubt. There was a ton of green there. By the end of the game, when all the Eagles fans left, they crowded around, and they filled up a good amount of the lower bowl. And, man, they're the best fans of the world for a reason. They'll travel better than anybody. They're a great fan base, and I'm happy that they're always around, and I love traveling with the Midnight Green. I'll go anywhere with them. I want to start going to some new stadiums myself, so the Green Legion guys, they did a great job with 4th and John, and they travel better than, I'd say, just about any team in the NFL.
You, by the way, are the chirpiest person I've ever been to a game with. Yeah. Like, that was awesome. It was really fun.
Frustration.
Yeah, like, I mean, there were some Bills fans, and you and a bunch of Eagles fans were in the section that we were sitting in and just going back and forth.
I mean, I said Josh Allen stinks. Spot the lie. Like, come on.
Yeah, that's
when you
true.
Start throwing around Nick Foles has won the Super Bowl for us, and Carson Wentz isn't a good quarterback, and he's injury prone.
The lamest Eagles comeback.
The same lamest narratives we've heard time and time again. Carson Wentz is now on pace for his second best season in his entire career. What he did yesterday, a guy who played in a dome his entire college career, outdueled a player who was brought in to, quote, play in the elements in Josh Allen, who only completed 47% of his passes and underthrew a ball while throwing into the wind.
Yeah, Robert Foster had Ronald Darby beat, and there was no safety over top to help, and Allen just underthrew it by like 10 yards.
I said, I'm pretty sure I said this to you yesterday, and I said it when I hopped on the pod yesterday with the PSN guys. At no point in that game yesterday was I sitting there and thinking, man, I would rather take Josh Allen over Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, yes, he completed 75% of his passes, less than 200 yards, but he was efficient with the football. And we talk about him not forcing things and giving what was taken to him. That was the unequivocal, perfect definition of a great Carson Wentz game, and a great game where you win in the trenches with your offensive line. Now on two impressive road victories in Lambeau Field and in Orchard Park, two of the roughest environments, your offensive line dominated.
Well, that's why I feel like Geno, those two games. That's why I feel better. And last year, their record should have been better than 4-4, right? Because they blew that game against the Panthers the week before. They blew the game in Tennessee against the Titans. So they arguably also should have been 6-2. But this year, I feel better because the teams that they've beaten and the teams that, like, Carson Wentz has looked good against. I mean, for as bad as that Minnesota loss was, I thought Carson Wentz was slinging it all over the field. I thought Carson Wentz had one of his best performances that I've seen throughout his four-year career. So that's why I'm still encouraged because, yes, you have a daunting couple games coming up here. I mean, Chicago next week, which isn't tough considering they're reeling right now, especially with Trubisky at quarterback. But then you got the Patriots and the Seahawks. But I feel good because then after that, there's this five-game, you know, trip where, you know, it's mostly home games and you don't have to go on a plane. You have to go on a plane one more time this year to Miami, and that's going to probably be a vacation for them. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's honestly could be a five-game winning streak that you still have coming up. And they've beaten some really good teams on the road still. So they're 4-4, but I've been impressed with a lot of the, yes, the two blowouts were bad these last 2 weeks, but before that, I'm thinking they're right where we thought they should be if one or two plays, you know, go the other way.
Without a doubt. And yesterday, it's another good Buffalo team that had something to prove. Even though we have said time and time again, we don't trust Josh Allen, which why they gave that Josh Allen that many opportunities is beyond me. But I trusted Carson Wentz, and I trusted Doug Peterson to get his team ready after the biggest loss of the season. And he is now 3-1 in those games coming off of his biggest loss in each respective season, and the only loss being in 2016 where they lost by 2 points to the Washington Redskins.
Yeah.
So they respond well under pressure. They respond when their back is against the wall. They responded last year in the exact same scenario, and they responded yesterday in the exact same scenario. And after the first quarter, it was kind of like up and down, but once they got to Josh Allen and they were getting off the field and they were creating turnovers, I kind of put my mind at ease because you didn't see that against Dak Prescott. You didn't see that against Kirk Cousins the week prior. You weren't getting to him. You weren't creating turnovers. The pressure wasn't getting there because the coverage wasn't there. I think we could put the case to rest that coverage matters more than pass rush when you don't have a coverage, because you saw what happened when you played at the line of scrimmage with your guys yesterday and Josh Allen had to go beyond his first read.
Yeah.
Your pressure got there.
Yeah, because you could still get there. You could still get there in 2 seconds, and that still might not be enough time. So, yeah, the fact that if your corners can buy you, and this is why I like press coverage a lot more, and you can still prevent the deep ball with safeties over top, the reason I like it is because, you know, jamming them at the line, making them work to create separation, that's going to free up, even if it's a half a second more, 1 second, that might be all Fletcher Cox needs to get there, or Brandon Graham. So, yeah, I'm with you, dude. I think that was overall their one of their most impressive wins, and to be there in person was awesome. And once again, shout out to Eagles fans, shout out to Fourth and John for making the time to come on the podcast Saturday. That was a lot of fun. It was all overall just a great weekend, and now me and Gino, we feel avenged from that offsides game in 2011, and we'll
eight
see them
years in the making.
Well, yep, 8 years in the making, and we'll see them in another 8 years. We got to hit one break here coming up on the Locked On Eagles podcast. We're going to continue to get into the takeaways. We'll go deeper into the game from the offensive side of the football and the defensive side of the football. And then, hey, the NFL trade deadline is tomorrow at 4:00. And there's been some moves being made by other teams. Me and Gino, we kind of communicated with Howie Roseman yesterday in a way. We'll get into that and see what the Eagles could do now that they're 4-4 and probably are buyers now at the deadline. So that's coming up as well on this Monday edition of Locked On Eagles. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, this isn't just for all of you out there who can't perform. It's for anyone who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Listen up. It's Blue Chew. Blue like the color blue. It's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So there's no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, none of that awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's B-L-U-E, BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast today. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri recapping the Eagles' 31-13 win over the Buffalo Bills. And Gino, like, there's a lot of good things that I want to get into here from an offensive perspective, also from a defensive perspective. But one thing that I was hoping we would see more consistent, something that I was really disappointed in, was Doug Peterson's play calling. And overall, just the execution has been very inconsistent throughout the season. But yesterday, I mean, Doug Peterson, we were calling for it all week. You know, some misdirection, reverses, counters, screens. Doug Peterson was on his A game yesterday. I mean, both touchdowns, I was over the moon with the way he dialed that up. Like the Dallas Goedert touchdown in the red zone, he faked that signature. He had Carson Wentz pump fake that signature Alshon Jeffrey screen that people always think is coming, and he almost used that predictability to his advantage, going to Goddard on the opposite end. And then the Sanders touchdown, that 65 or 67 yard run, he had a two running back backfield, 21 personnel. Jordan Howard, the lead block, destroys Matt Milano, and then Sanders goes off to the races. So that was, like, to me, a vintage Doug play calling game, and it was very playoffs versus Atlanta-esque, if you agree. Like 2017, a lot of RPO, a lot of play action, that kind of stuff. I thought overall it was a hell of a game by Doug Peterson.
Yeah, and we were kind of questionable on this Buffalo defense if Matt Milano was going to play, and he ends up playing. And I was skeptical that they were going to be able to move the ball that well in that situation. But man, they did a great job at it. They took what was given to them in the past game, especially in the elements. They drew up things to mismatches. You had Dallas Goedert getting open against Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer all game long. Alshon Jeffrey, dude, was creating separation on Tre'Davious White.
Yeah, he was.
Man coverage, which is great to see. He looks fully healthy from that calf injury.
And he had a big 38-yard reception down the left sideline that set up one of those touchdowns.
That's the second consecutive week that they have hit him in that honey hole where they're playing zone coverage. The safety seemed to not get enough depth on that one, and they just got him right in the perfect position for 30-yard strike. That was a beautiful ball from Carson Wentz. Great play from Alshon Jeffrey. Great play from the tight ends. The blocking was phenomenal. And when this Eagles offensive line just churns, that's when it's the best. And how Doug Peterson in his press conference today said that he had to attribute that play call, the 21 personnel, the long Miles Sanders run, to Jeff Stoutland. And it just seems like just such a Jeff Stoutland thing to do. Yeah, we're going to have everybody on the field and everybody's going to block for our running back. That's just like such an offensive line coach mentality that we're going to ground and pound and take the yards. And Sanders, I said it yesterday, and I looked at you, and it was kind of like a proud dad moment. I was like, that's your guy. I was like, hats off. I was like, that is your guy, and you've been waiting for that moment. And
oh,
he finally
gosh,
did it. He broke off this. I said he kind of equates to like Ronald Jones when he was at USC. Like, you just kind of lose him in the offensive line, and then all of a sudden he's at the second level, and all of a sudden he's down the field. You know, and Ron Joe's done that a little bit in his second year in Tampa this year, and Miles Sanders did that yesterday. And those guys that have that straight line speed that cannot be coached, those Ronald Jones, the Christian McCaffreys, the Miles Sanders, the Delvin Cooks, that is just something that in running backs, if you are blocking well up front and they are consistent with hitting their gaps, and Miles Sanders will continue to grow in that department as he gets more and more experience. Man, this is just the beginning of a player who's going to be one of the most explosive backs in the NFL.
Wait, I thought it was a bust of a pick, though, Gino. That's what everybody's been telling me the past couple weeks.
He's only created 7 out of the 10 most explosive plays for this team.
And he has 8 25-plus yard plays. He has a huge kickoff under his belt against Green Bay. Like, he looked, and I will give people credit, though, he was struggling the past couple weeks running the football.
Sure.
But again, he started 1 year at Penn State. This is a guy that's super young. Even Howie Roseman said his stock, his draft value probably would have been higher if he waited a year. Maybe would have been even a first round pick. So I thought he looked complete yesterday. His most complete performance, that 67 yard touchdown. Just, yes, he has cut ability, and I don't want to discourage him from trying to create more, but he also has a lot of speed, Gino. And sometimes he's really good at getting skinny, bursting through holes, and just get downfield. Like, I'm not one to just be like, oh, barrel through the A-gap if there's nothing there and pick up 2 yards. But also at the same time, like, you have other abilities. You're not just a cutting type, a Jukes running back. You have straight line speed. I mean, he outran like four guys down the left sideline. Sometimes just, you know, kick it into that top gear and go. And he did that yesterday. I was over the moon with Miles Sanders. Would you agree? I just feel like this Eagles team has been able to sling it over the years, right? You know, Nick Foles out-dueled Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. But I've never felt more comfortable, and I don't think the Eagles offense feels more comfortable than when that offensive line gets going like that, when they start dominating on the ground. I mean, that fourth quarter drive was vintage Philadelphia Eagles football, a 14-play drive that killed over 8 minutes at the start of the fourth quarter. I mean, that was a dagger set up eventually then by that Jordan Howard touchdown. That really put the game out of reach. I mean, Kelce and Brooks putting on a clinic, that to me is when the Eagles are at their best. They did it against Green Bay. They did it against Buffalo yesterday, 218 rushing yards. That, to me, is when the Eagles' offense is most comfortable, is when they just start barreling over the defense. I mean, Ed Oliver got bullied yesterday.
Yeah, he was one guy that I was kind of worried about, but they did exactly what I thought and just took him out of the game plan completely. And they did a great job. Everybody up front, Andre Dillard in the second start, played very well. He had one slip up early on the sack, but I think he responded great. Everybody on that line was great. I think Lane responded from a bad week the week prior, and they had 218 yards of rushing, the most since 2014. It's crazy to see, and I look at my Oregon Ducks in college football, and the other night they had a back go for 250 yards, and it's like the Eagles were a throwing team, Oregon was a throwing team, and now I'm watching two high-powered offenses become running teams right in front of my eyes. And even Carson Wentz was getting in on the fun, and the third-down conversions he had with his legs, that's something that's the Carson Wentz you want to see. You can't take that element away like Washington did with RG3 back
just
in the day.
Just don't die between two guys. I was seeing flashbacks of that Rams
scary,
play.
But you have to use that to your advantage.
No, absolutely. That's why you drafted
everybody
him.
Thought on that long third down they were going to try and just get the ball out probably to Zach Ertz, probably to Alshon Jeffery, and he just pulls it, finds space, converts the third down. He's got that killer third and Wentz instinct. And, man, the guy we haven't talked about yet, Jordan Howard. What a game by him. 4.2 yards a carry, did exactly what you wanted him to do, picked up some dirty yards, picked up first downs. It was going to be a rough environment in the elements. Hangs on to the football better than any running back I've seen the past couple years for the Eagles. Just, it's so hard to not gain yards for that guy. And if you go on Next Gen Stats and see his rushing chart, there's only two red plays out of all of the carries that he had. So not a lot of negative out of Jordan Howard.
They have that thunder and lightning combo.
He's one of the best in DVOA, and just continue to get Miles Sanders in space. Continue to let Jordan Howard pick up those yards. This team is getting fun again, Lou. Like, if they continue on this trend, next week should be fun. A very similar matchup to a Mitch Trubisky-led offense, which is very similar to what you saw yesterday in Buffalo. It's going to be a good game, but yeah, this team responded well in the face of adversity, and there are a lot of winners coming out of this matchup from the Philadelphia Eagles side.
They have that thunder and lightning combo at running back. It's just so fun to have players that can make more of what this offensive line is doing on the ground. And for an update, by the way, for Miles Sanders and his shoulder injury, the x-rays came back negative. Doug Peterson said on his Monday press conference that he should be fine. He's day-to-day, but he shouldn't miss any time, which is huge, because when you have Howard being able to just break three different tackles and tire out the linebacking core, and then you have the lightning of Miles Sanders running wheel routes down the sidelines and being a much more decisive runner.
Reminded
yesterday.
Me of 2017, dude. It was
where you just keep rotating
in. Even
the guys.
Boston Scott had a touchdown.
Yeah, Boston Scott had his first touchdown, so shout out to Boston Scott. But and just listen to a couple of these impressive stats by Miles Sanders this year. I mean, because he has been, since DeSean Jackson has been out, he has been the one providing the explosive plays. Like you said, 7 of 10 of their 30-plus yard yard plays since Jackson's been out, or I think, no, all season, has been by the hands of Miles Sanders. He leads all NFL rookies with 709 all-purpose yards. He's the first NFL running back in 12 years with 450-plus scrimmage yards and 250-plus return yards in his first seven games. Adrian Peterson was the last person to do that. That's a pretty good running back. And he's the only NFL rookie in 2019 with 200 rushing yards and 200 receiving yards. So Miles Sanders is becoming the guy that we envisioned he would be when they took him in the second round over guys like, you know, I mentioned it last week, Mecole Hardman of the Kansas City Chiefs at wide receiver. So
had a game yesterday, too.
Yeah, and he was dominating against the Green Bay Packers on Sunday night. So thankfully, Miles Sanders looked good to make me feel a little bit better about that. But yeah, overall to recap, to kind of just put a nutshell, the offensive performance, it was complete. I mean, I think that's the best way to put it. And don't box score scout Carson Wentz's game.
Besides,
I thought he was
one
sharp.
Guy. We got to pick on one guy here.
Okay, go nuts.
Actually, two. Nelson Agholor, just every time he touched the football yesterday, just bad things happened outside of that one run that he had.
He had one nice reverse play, and that's it.
I'm just so fed up with him. But Mac Hollins went the entire calendar month of October without catching a football.
Is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside hurt, or is he just like in the doghouse?
I don't know what is going on, because the fact that this guy, he was not on Trey White most of the game. I mean, he was against Levi Wallace a majority of the game, and he still couldn't get any separation and just doesn't factor into the game plan. I just don't get why he's
on the field. He's a waste of space on the field, dude.
Just run 12 personnel and keep him off the field.
I don't know if it's blocking or what it is, but it's inexcusable that he's...
What is he, Riley Cooper 2? He's pretty much Riley Cooper 2.0.
He's the 2015 version of Riley Cooper that just was a space eater and didn't do virtually anything. He's the nose tackle of the offense. I mean, that's just...
that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, so, man, I don't know. Hopefully, maybe, we'll see. We're going to get into it in the next segment. There might be another wide receiver coming to town, depending on what happens at the trade deadline tomorrow, but Carson Wentz, that drive, I said it yesterday, he eats third and fives for breakfast. I mean, he is so good on third down this year, Gino, and really throughout his career. That drive I was talking about where they killed 8 minutes of clock, he had three huge third down pickups. You mentioned the two runs and a pass to Zach Ertz. Those were third and fives, third and tens, and third and sevens. And the one was awesome because Doug Peterson was talking about it. It was supposed to be a screen pass, and some people thought, I initially thought that it was supposed to be a fake screen like they had on the Goddard touchdown, and that it was more of a QB draw, you know, through the B gap. Mm-hmm. But that was all improv by Carson Wentz. He saw the screen pass was blown up on the right side, and he took off down the field and picked up 10 yards. And while I don't want to see him lunge in between two defenders like that, because that's literally how he tore his ACL in 2017, like you said, you can't take away that killer instinct, that mobility, because once again, that is why you draft him. He did, absolutely. He ran the football really well yesterday. You can tell he's got his legs under him once again. He's healthy.
Yeah, and his escapability in the pocket too. There was that one play where we thought he was about to get sacked and fortunately gets out of the pocket. It wasn't a complete pass, but it was early on, and that's a big play. Like, they were taking some big sacks, and just for his escapability, had his legs back under him, he just looked confident. And some of the throws he's making, man, are just incredible. Like, that touchdown pass to Dallas Goedert was so seamless for him, just to move around the pocket, fake the screen to Alshon Jeffrey, reset his feet.
It was so
just
smooth.
Get to space and find Dallas Goedert. It, just a flick of the wrist. It was just, it was like he was playing in another league compared to these guys. It's just, a lot of people were saying that Josh Allen had a similar day to Carson Wentz. I don't see
no
that
way.
At all. I saw it with my eyes. He was efficient. A lot of the incompletions he had were due to the wind, like the one ball to Zach Ertz when he's fading to his right. That wind took that ball probably like 5 yards. It was
outside of that,
him,
though. Like, you're completing
face,
70% of your throws in that wind. Like, get out of here. Josh Allen was under 50. I mean, he completed over 70% of his throws, and what wind felt like. I mean, that wind, Gino, did not die down at all. So he has now done this in super tough road environments multiple times this year against great defenses. And even though some of them have come in losses, Minnesota, Atlanta, he has also looked great in those games and against Green Bay and Buffalo. And you can look at the Packers game, and sure, he threw for under 200 yards, and Carson Wentz threw for under 200 yards again on Sunday. But once again, if you're box score scouting his performances in these games, then you are just it's irresponsible. That's how I would put it, because he has been awesome in these kind of situations.
Yesterday, I looked at Carson Wentz, and just when he was out there, he wasn't fazed in that environment. It was loud. He did everything he needed to do to win that game. I thought Doug Peterson, once he got in a rhythm, really called a great game. The runs were great. They just imposed their will, and this team really goes as far as the trenches go, I would say. And yesterday was a perfect example of that, because they took over the run game in a tough environment. They just imposed their will on that Buffalo line. Their linebackers were doing them no favors, missing all those tackles. And the defensive line got to Josh Allen. We talked about a guy who holds on to the football, seemingly did exactly what we expected yesterday. And for the Bills to just continue to run him as a runner, to me, is crazy.
Because and the defense got to him. I mean, that
the
was...
The Eagles are the best run defense in the league for a reason. Jim Schwartz will not give up the run, but you would take your quarterback and willingly throw him against the line that has Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, and Fletcher Cox for what reason?
Three strip
sacks, all because
he
went out there and fumbled the football. Exactly why we have one of the best run defenses, because they will create turnovers on quarterbacks. They will get in there into those rough areas, make havoc for your quarterback and for your running backs. They've done it to Dalvin Cook. They've done it to everybody that they've thrown out there running the football. So for the Bills to do what they did yesterday, I didn't love that game plan from them. And Eagles really outcoached them on this game. They got outcoached last week in Dallas, and they turned around and outcoached Buffalo this week.
They had some weird decisions from Brian Daboll, the Bills' offensive coordinator. Like, the Eagles had a huge four-down stop in their own territory on Josh Allen. Ronald Darby made a hell of a play on fourth down, and I didn't really understand why the Bills did that. If they took the points, they were going with the wind. It would have been an 8-point ball game. But the Eagles were able to get off the field, and hey, that defense really did keep them in the game early on. The Bills had an opportunity with a minute left in the half. They were up 7-3, and they just got the ball back. And I thought the turning point was on the very next play of that drive. Brandon Graham gets to Josh Allen, strip sacks. The Eagles get a short field, and they punch it in and get an 11-7 lead. When this Eagles team has a lead, the offense plays better, and the defense plays better. And it was nice to be on the opposite end of those short fields this week, Gino, because the Eagles, recipe. If this defense can get turnovers and get the Eagles the ball with short fields, they are one of the best red zone offenses in football, and that was huge on Sunday. I mean, Fletcher Cox getting there, Derek Barnett, and Brandon Graham. The defensive line is starting to take off.
For once, man, it's good to just know that the pressure was there because the coverage was there. We've talked about it all year, and I just feel bad for Fletcher Cox. You look at him in the last 2 weeks, he looks healthy. He's got 2.5 sacks under his belt. Even though the coverage wasn't there last week, he still got to Dak, but the coverage was there yesterday, and he finishes with 1.5 sacks. So now imagine, if we're going to preface it, you go out and happen to get a very good cornerback before tomorrow at 4 p.m., those sacks are going to be coming in bunches even more, and Derek Barnett and Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox might all be on pace to hit that 10-sack mark, which I projected them before the season, because they are the three guys that are getting it done. And you go out and add on the edge, I think this team has a lot to go in the department of play calling on offense and defense, because they're limited in what they have personnel-wise. This is a big 24 hours coming up here for Howie Roseman, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and look, there's still some work to do. They gave up 3 third and long plays on the drive that made it 17-13. I feel like the defense always gives up points after the offense scores, and the units need to take more advantage of each other when the other unit is having success. I think that's something they need to really work on, is getting in sync, the offense and defense playing well together, and I thought they did that in the second half. But yeah, you got to stop those 3rd and 14 conversions. On the one drive, the Bills converted a 3rd and 14, a 3rd and 13, and then a 3rd and 8, and they're still... Jim Schwartz, I'll give you credit, man. Like, you adjusted. You had your corners playing up. You dared the Bills to throw down the field, which is a weak point of Josh Allen's, also in that wind. At the same time, though, like, the Bills probably should have had a touchdown to Robert Foster. Ronald Darby got burned, and Rodney McLeod was kind of in that no man's land where there's just no way he's getting to either side. And they continue to do that, which is something that bothers me schematically. And, you know, still some dumb penalties, the Boston Scott fumble. But overall, before we get into the deadline talk, Gino, I just thought it was, once again, a complete performance by both sides. And I feel satisfied heading into Chicago week.
there's still some things that we shot ourselves in the foot. I think, like, that Malcolm Jenkins penalty on Josh Allen.
Yeah, that was
no
dumb.
Need for that. You just kept him on the field when it was unnecessary to do so.
Another roughing the passer call, too.
Yep, still a couple areas of weakness, just like not getting off the field on third down. Better quarterbacks will make you pay for that. But overall, it's really the game we wanted to see, a complete game from both sides of the football. We were waiting to see the sacks and the turnovers come. They came. We were waiting for the offense to just continue to impose their will and call a good game script, which they did quarters 2 through 4. Still waiting for a fast start, but quarters 2 through 4, Jordan Howard, Miles Sanders, Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, each of them stepped up in a respective moment and made a play for Carson Wentz when they needed to, because we've been waiting for guys to go out there and make plays. This week, they really stepped up for Carson Wentz, and I'm happy how this group responded, and that was some Philadelphia Eagles football yesterday.
All right, so where they go now is a very interesting conversation that we're going to get into coming up next in the Lockdown Eagles podcast, because the NFL trade deadline is tomorrow at 4 o'clock, and now that the Eagles are 4-4 with the season seemingly saved for now, there are some players still on the market that I think the Eagles should go after, as do you, Gino, and I don't want to say we talked to Howie Roseman yesterday, but we got some communication from the Eagles general manager at the game in Buffalo yesterday. So we're going to get into that next, coming up right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, Eagles fans across the globe, welcome back to this Monday edition of the show. We are wrapping it up with some trade deadline talk. Because, Gino, if they were 3-5, I feel like part of the reason Howie Roseman was, I don't want to say holding back, because he did try to get Jalen Ramsey. He didn't go all in, but he did offer a first and second round pick. There was reports he offered a first and Nelson Aguilar for Patrick Peterson. So he has been, you know, calling teams up. He was also talking with the Denver Broncos about wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders before he got traded to the San Francisco 49ers. But at the same time, I do think there was some hesitation considering where the Eagles were at 3-4, two blowout losses. If they lost in Buffalo and they looked the same as they had, I wouldn't give up draft value. But now that they're 4-4, they put together probably their most complete game of the season with the deadline tomorrow. Now, I think Howie Roseman should go in on a Chris Harris, right, or a Rodney Anderson. That, to me, is where they should go now. And why don't you tell the story? I mean, on the sideline, you were telling him to trade for Anderson, and he didn't ignore it.
So this isn't the first time that I've gotten some inside sources. I did break the Corey Graham trade, or not trade, signing back
signing,
last year. Not my most glorious moment, seeing that Corey Graham stunk in 2018. But yeah, as Lou was saying, every time I go to a game, I like to get right down by the field, right in the front, and watch practice, just see how it was going. It was really cool. We were right by Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert while they were stretching, and saw Miles Sanders getting ready to take some punt returns, and it was a cool little environment. And then we saw the Eagles fan who always paints his face and has the shoulder pads on, and we saw Clark from NBCSN, and we're just seeing a lot of Philly faces, and then Dougie P comes out, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you just see Howie Roseman's literally 10 feet away from us. I didn't even realize it. And he's looking at the fans, and I go, Howie, we going to trade for Robbie Anderson? He kind of looked my way, tossed a thumbs up to Lou and I. It was kind of surreal. So, I mean, who knows? It's a guy that they have been connected to for a long time, and they wanted to do it last year. They wanted to do it this year, we've heard. So let's get it done. Howie seems like a guy who wants to make a move. They missed out on Leonard Williams, which I'm not too sad about, because
he got traded to the Giants today for a third round pick.
I couldn't see them paying a third defensive tackle now that you have Malik Jackson there still coming back next year.
Tim Jernigan coming back in a couple weeks.
Exactly, Tim Jernigan as well. But to make a move at wide receiver makes a ton of sense. Robbie Anderson, a guy who's making $3 million+, which is very cheap for a guy of his production. Nelson Aguilar looks like a guy who's seemingly losing favor in Philadelphia. You bring in Robbie Anderson for, let's say, a second round pick. That's a guy that you sign right now to a 3-4 year deal.
Oh, at 26 years old, I would hope so, yeah.
Without a doubt. And a guy you can grow with, and look at a team with two speed elements in the Kansas City Chiefs and Tyreek Hill with a great quarterback. You have Mecole Hardman, Tyreek Hill for Patrick Mahomes. that's a combination, Robbie Anderson, DeSean Jackson for Carson Wentz, that starts to light some eyebrows up. You know, it starts to raise some eyebrows. And another name that has been connected to them as well, it's getting some a lot of heat in the last couple hours here, is Darius Slay.
That's the move to me. Like, if he is available, that's the move at corner. Like, throw Chris Harris out the window, throw Patrick Peterson out the window. Like, Darius Slay is the guy I want. Give them a first-round pick for Darius Slay. I'll trade a second for, you know, Robbie Anderson. I want both. I mean, those are the two.
Oh, for sure.
If I had to list the guys that I want the most right now, it's probably Slay, Robbie Anderson, Chris Harris. I don't think the Cardinals are going to make Patrick Peterson available. They're 3-4-1 right now. Their season's very much alive. Why you would trade Peterson right now at 29 years old, like you were just talking about with Slay, doesn't really make sense to me. But yeah, look, if Slay, if they want to talk about Slay, that to me is the move. I still want a wide receiver or cornerback more than a defensive tackle, than a linebacker, because I think there's an immediate need for that. Like, they have to bring in some speed right now. DeSean Jackson, we don't know when he's going to come back. He's going to get mixed into practice this week. He could return against Chicago. It's probably more likely that they take that bye week after the Bears game and get him back for that Patriots matchup at Lincoln Financial Field. But they got to bring speed in without DeSean Jackson, because, and even when he comes back, because you don't know how healthy he's going to be. You don't know if he can be able to play the rest of the season when he does return. And at the same time, some people are like, okay, but when DeSean Jackson returns, like, him and Robbie Anderson have the same role. I mean, for me, Gino, like, DeSean Jackson has a lot of his success in the slot and reduced splits. Alshon Jeffrey can play inside. I think Robbie Anderson could do it too. Like, that's not something I'm going to go.
It opens up the field for
you. I'm not going to say, oh, none of them are slot receivers, so I'm not trading for Robbie Anderson. To me, I'm making that work with those three.
We'll see, man. A little over 24 hours away in Howie season.
And even if they don't go crazy, even if they don't bring Slay in, even if they don't make a trade for Patrick Peters or Robbie Anderson, they got to do something. Even if it's Robert Foster from the Buffalo Bills, who yesterday almost had a big, deep touchdown. I mean, that's a guy that had a lot of 25, 30-plus yard plays last year with Josh Allen, who's very inaccurate down the field. So overall, I just hope they do something within the next 24 hours. And we're going to keep you guys posted. We'll be ready for an emergency podcast if the Eagles do, in fact, make a move. If not, though, we'll be back tomorrow after the trade deadline, and we'll recap all of the news. And hopefully it's a crazy one. I mean, a lot of the trades have already happened. But, you know, last year, the NFL trade deadline was it was pretty crazy, and the Eagles made a move for Golden Tate. So, and they're in the same spot now at 4-4. They should be in the market once again to buy some talent and help really kickstart a playoff run here down the stretch. That's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you for joining in on this Monday edition of the show. The Eagles get a 31-13 win over the Buffalo Bills on Sunday to get to 4-4. We will be back tomorrow. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on any provider or on LockedOnEagles.com. And the conversation always continues on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiase, LOE, and at Gino_LOE. For my co-host Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds!